Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written to Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring Black girls who aren't all that nice and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by Black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a Black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Written to Melanin podcast, you guys. I'm here today with Omari Richards, who is a debut novelist who specializes in sword and soul style epic fantasy. Born to immigrants from the Commonwealth of Dominica in America, he grew up hearing tales of the homeland, from shape-shifting witches to monsters hatched from chicken eggs. These stories enriched his imagination, and he hopes to capture the imagination of readers in a similar way with his novels and short stories. Welcome to the podcast, Omari.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I'm excited to have you. So before we get into this whole conversation, let's introduce your novel to our listeners. So tell them a little bit about your debut novel, The Kamani Legacy.
Sure, no problem. So The Kamani Legacy is an epic fantasy based off of West African history, mythology, folklore, and legends. And it focuses on three protagonists, Kamau, Rizia, and Maslo Kamani, as they each reach different aspects of adulthood. Kamau, the middle brother, is on the cusp of adulthood. Rizia is on the cusp, is 13, the youngest sister. She is also on the cusp of womanhood. And Maslo, the eldest brother, has been a man since he was about 10 years old. So he's been grappling with adulthood for the longest time. And the book follows them on their adventures, misadventures, as they each try to grapple with what does adulthood mean in their particular culture, while also uncovering a conspiracy against their clan, and they each uncover different aspects of it, and they all have to come together to put a stop to it before it's too late.
That sounds intense on a lot of levels.
It was intense to write at a certain point, I'm not going to lie.
I can imagine. So I'm guessing, since there are so many aspects to the story, that this is going to be a series? Like, it's going to be more than one book, or is it a standalone?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be more than one book. Right now, I have fully outlined approximately three books with at least two spinoffs in mind, and there's always room for more.
Love that. So if you guys are listening to this, I'm going to go ahead and plug his book at the very beginning. Y'all know that it's on the Melanin Library, so go ahead and check that out. There will be a link in the show notes for it. And you guys know that if you get it from the Melanin Library, then that is also helping to support the Melanin Library. So for sure, check it out. This is a recent release. It just came out on June 19th. So make sure you get into it. That being said, you mentioned a lot within that introduction, so I have questions. So you mentioned that it's like sword and soul epic fantasy, and that's a little bit different from sword and sorcery, which is kind of the traditional term for that genre of epic fantasy. So what led you to A, call it sword and soul, and then also to just like write epic fantasy in the beginning? Too many questions. How would you define sword and soul for our listeners? Let's start there.
Right. So sword and soul was pretty much coined by the late Charles M. Saunders. He wrote a series of books starting with the Amaro series. It's about three or five books about this really strong, tough guy named Amaro. And it's based off of African mythology and fantasy altogether. And it's basically a kind of Conan Barbarian style of storytelling, where the main character is like this really strong, powerful dude, and you follow him as he faces off against different monsters, goes up against different clans, and just travels around as like this guy with no home, but he's trying to find his home. So Charles M. Saunders really coined the phrase sword and soul fantasy to differentiate between the more traditional kind of fantasy. So sword and soul is just basically a way of saying Black fantasy featuring powerful Black protagonists in very high fantastical settings, basically. So that was one question. And the second question was how I came up with it, right?
Yes, how you decided on that.
All right, so this takes me all the way back to the golden age of 2005, a distant time.
So long ago.
I was 15 years old, and I was reading the book Elvis by Christopher Paolini. It was the second book in the Inheritance cycle. Even as a kid, I just loved fantasy. So I was reading Elvis, and I was reaching the end. And then at that point, the protagonist, Aragorn, met up with his cousin, Rowan. They were separated at the end of the first book. Rowan just met up with Aragorn, and Aragorn was working with this rebel leader, Nasuda, who is a very dark-skinned black woman. And then Rowan had a scene with Aragorn and Nasuda. And then after Nasuda left, Rowan turns to Aragorn and says, "So does she dye her skin?" And then Aragorn says, "No, it's just always like that." So I was reading that at 15 years old, and I was like, they are acting like they've never seen a black person before. And then I thought about it, and then I realized they grew up in the mountains, which is far from Nasuda's people's area, which was in the Hardak Desert, in like the central aspect of Alagasia. So I thought, okay, probably because they've never seen a black person before. And then I read a little bit more, and then I started to think, wait, I've never seen a black person in epic fantasy either. Then my next thought was, okay, so I guess I'll just write one. And that was basically the catalyst.
I love the fact that you were just very much like, I guess I'll just have to write the book. Like, I've had the pleasure of talking to lots of authors in this space, and I love it every time because I feel like all of us have that moment where we're just like, huh, I haven't seen this before. Oh, I guess I'll just write it. That's the long and the short of it. So
exactly. Write the kind of stories you want to see.
Exactly. I guess that answers my next question too, which is like, what drew you to epic fantasy? But I guess if you're reading it, it was kind of like, would you say like a natural progression that like, of course, I'm going to write this?
Yeah, like you said in my intro, I basically grew up around epic fantasy in terms of oral storytelling, because my parents were just natural oral storytellers because they were theater kids growing up. Mm-hmm. They did different skits and different productions back in Dominica. And my dad, he always had this story about this turtle who I think had like a library on his back or something like that. And he just knew that story by heart. So he was just a natural storyteller. So growing up, I always heard about stories about witches and monsters and, you know, werewolves and, you know, the witches you could stop if you step on their shadows and so on and so forth. Like, they didn't actually believe in these kind of things, but they always told these stories in either jest or just telling stories to us before we went to bed. So that always got my imagination going. So of course I started to lean more towards epic fantasy because that's where all the cool stuff was. That's where the dragons were, unicorns, immortal warriors, all that kind of stuff. So it was a natural progression.
I love that. I love that you grew up in a household with stories, and so that it's like ingrained in you in a sense. And that also makes me curious because, you know, writing fantasy in and of itself is like a different beast from like writing contemporary, because one, you have to make up all of the rules. You have to create the world before you can create the story that exists within the world. So that's a unique challenge all on its own. But it's also an even more specific kind of challenge when it's like your first book that you're writing altogether, because it's like you're learning your process, you're learning the whole shebang at one time. So one of the things that I know a lot of authors kind of talk about is how difficult it is for your first ever book to be the start of a series. So how do you feel about it? Because like you said, you have at least 3 books and 2 spinoffs planned, and that is a challenge. So how do you feel about tackling a series for your very first project into publishing?
I just think of it like, it's just really fun because I started when I was 15 years old, and this whole journey took me about 15, 17 years from first idea to publication. So I basically just had a lot of time to really grapple with, I guess you could say, the enormity of what I'm doing. And at certain points I thought, okay, maybe I should just do something smaller, like short stories or contemporary fiction. But every time I sat down to try to write contemporary fiction or a short story, my mind would always just wander back to this epic fantasy, like characters. I came up with in the contemporary space, I would always think, you know, that would be a really cool idea for this particular clan here. Or short stories, ideas I come up with, I would just think, you know, that's a really cool backstory for the novel. So no matter what I did, I just came back to the novels. So after all, I just figured, okay, I guess I'm supposed to be writing this thing, so let's get to it. And I just find the world building and creating the world, it's just part of the fun. I just have fun with it. So as long as I'm having fun, it doesn't really feel like I'm doing something enormous. I'm just doing something I really enjoy and sharing it with people. And every time someone says, oh, how'd you come up with such a vast world? I just kind of shrug my shoulders, because at the time I'm doing it, it doesn't feel like I'm doing something like that. I'm just trying to tell the best story that I can.
No, I feel that 100%, because I've been asked similar questions about my books when I talk to other people. And it's always like, oh, well, how did you do this? Like, what inspired this? Like, how? I think sometimes people ask the question expecting this really like intricate answer, where it's just like, well, I did this, right, and I sat down, and I planned out this, and it took me months and years. And it's just like, no, I was just having fun with it. It was just like, oh, here's an idea. Let me follow it and see where it goes. And then it becomes something bigger than what it is. But in that moment, like when you're writing the story, it's like, oh, this just makes sense for the story that I'm writing. Exactly. So I'm so glad that you said that, because I'm like, oh, okay, I am not the only one who thinks like this.
Yeah, it's always good to know that you're not alone, because writing is just, sometimes it's just really isolating. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it just feels like you're going nuts. And, you know, my fiance can attest to this. She often walks in on me just like pacing up and down the room, just talking to myself. Yeah. And I'm like actually trying to talk to the characters and they're not talking back. And then she just kind of gives me like this look. It's like, are you okay? It's like, yeah, I'm writing. And then she says, yeah, I think you need to get out of the house for a little. So it's always good to find your community, find your people, so that you can actually say, hey, my characters aren't talking to me, and you don't sound like a crazy person.
Right. I feel like there's so many levels to that, because like my husband is very similar to your fiance, where it's just like he knows that if the door is closed, like I just need to be left alone, because the way I don't like looking crazy when I'm writing. But it's just like, if I am writing specifically gestures, I'm over here gesturing and like repeating dialogue, like, would they really say this? Does this sound correct? And I'm over here like gasping and rolling my eyes, and he's just like, are you okay? Like, are you good? And it's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. But also, you touched on like finding your community, because one of the things I talk about a lot on this podcast is, as an author, you need a community, because it is very isolationist. Because like at the end of the day, it's pretty much like everything. You have to sit down and do the thing. Like, you have to sit down and write the story. No one else can write your story. So in a way, exactly, it is very like, it is very lonely at times. So when you mention like having a community, I know one of the questions that I get asked a lot is like, how do you go about finding an author community? Like, how do you go about finding your peoples to hang out with, who are going to like support you and be there on the journey with you?
Well, a lot of times, at least in my case, I always kind of find it accidentally. And after that, accident just kind of forms organically, because for the longest time, I could not get past chapter 6. This book has gone through, I want to say, at least 10 different incarnations, and in at least 8 of those, it just ends after chapter 6, because I just couldn't figure out what happened, or I hated what I had written and I just deleted it. So one day I was just surfing on Facebook, and then it recommended me a writing group nearby that was just down the street from me at my local library. So I went there. It was a writing group for Black authors in the area. So I was like, oh, this sounds perfect. So I went there. There were only like 2 other people there. And then, you know, we sat down, talked about what we were writing. And then I read a few pages of my latest chapter. And then, there was like this glaze over their eyes after I finished writing. And then they asked me, so what comes next? And I was like, I don't know. I was actually thinking about deleting this. And then they all sent you and said, no, don't delete it. Keep coming. So I was like, oh, okay then. So I just kept going. So I went back to writing. And then every time I felt like, you know, just deleting what I wrote, you know, that little scene kept playing out in my head with them saying, keep going. You want to know what happens? So every time I went back to the writing group, I always had something new because they all just enjoyed it so much. And then eventually I made it to the end of the draft that way.
I love that because I feel like part of the process of writing that sometimes people don't really touch on or don't really want to admit is that there is sometimes that very heavy, like, I don't say insecurity, but like essentially insecurity where it's just like, I don't know if this is good. I don't know if I should continue on in this direction, especially when you're writing fantasy, because one, fantasy is long. Like, it's not a 40,000 word novel where it's like 40,000 words could very easily be like the first 100 pages. And like,
yeah,
it's
like after 4,000 pages, you're just finished explaining the backstory and the characters and the basics of the setting.
Right. Like, you're still very much in the introductory phase of the book. And it can be intimidating to get to that and then be like, okay, I don't know what comes next. I don't know if this is actually going anywhere. And then to have to, like you said, basically delete it. And I just want you to know that I understand 100% where you're coming from, because when I wrote my first book, We Are the Origin, I always tell people, like, similar to you, like, it lived in my head for years before I ever got to a finished version. And there are so many incarnations of the book where it's just like, there are versions that no one will ever know existed, you know? But then when you have the final version, it's just like, oh, you make it look easy, you know? So I'm really glad that you're willing to share that aspect of the journey, because I know sometimes as authors, we like to be like, oh, no, it's talent. It's fine. I sat down and I wrote the book, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's important to emphasize the amount, like, I like to tell people writing is almost like sculpting in a way, in that there is a lot of shattered and broken pieces throughout your workspace. Like, there's broken hands, mangled hands, half finished heads, and, you know, there are statues that are half finished because they're missing a leg and everything, and the perfect product is just almost an amalgamation of all those broken parts, because those are the parts that actually work. So those are the parts you kept. Mm-hmm. So then you have to figure out how to, like, fuse them together in an interesting and intricate way. So I feel like it's more important for authors to just say, like, hey, you like this product? It was a result of, like, these 10,000 broken parts that I ruffled together into something.
Exactly.
Because that way it makes it seem less intimidating.
Exactly. And also, it's important, I think, as authors to understand that those broken parts, it's okay to be like, this isn't working, and to just, I don't want to say smash it, maybe because I watched this show on Netflix where it's like there was glass blowing, and at a certain point where you're like, okay, this isn't going to work, I have to go back to the beginning, you just got to smash what you got and then keep it moving. It's like, but the thing is, you still have that experience of creating that first product. So you're still learning from it. You're still being like, okay, this is what worked. This is where I need to adjust the process. This is where I need to adjust the story, the characters, the setting, what have you, you know?
Exactly.
All that being what it is, I feel like if we're here, we have to also have the conversation of diversity in fantasy as a whole, because you touched on it a little bit earlier in this conversation where you mentioned reading a book and it's like they had never seen a Black person in the book. And it's like, within the context of the world, sure, it made sense, but also in our very real lived experience, it's like, no, there's not a lot of diversity in color in fantasy. Right. I kind of want to know, what's your take on that? Because I know there are some people who listen to this podcast who maybe like, well, I don't understand why it's so necessary to focus on that aspect, because it's a conversation that I feel like comes up a lot in the bookish community on the internet, where it's just like, well, I don't understand why I have to read diversely. And it's just like, there's so much value in it. And I would just kind of like to know, like, you're taking your thoughts on it.
Okay, well, strap in, because it's a long one.
It's a rip.
First of all, people just read what they want to read. If you don't want to read, like, heavily diverse books, you're missing out, but that is your prerogative. I'm not trying to convert anybody, whatever. But diversity in fantasy is important because, one, just variety, and two, it helps you experience different cultures, different places, different ways of being, different ways of viewing the world. Because the way a Western European knight or Western European king views the world would be different from a West African king or a West African warrior, how they would view the world, or even an indigenous warrior, or even an East Asian emperor or a Southeast Asian emperor, or just regular people view the world differently. And things that would be familiar to a Western European would be completely different and strange to a West African, and vice versa. So I feel like it's important to not only depict those differences, but also go deeper into those cultures in a way that fantasy allows, because fantasy allows you to just toy with and play with ideas that exist in the real world, and it lets you just explore them and take them to, I don't want to say an extreme, but to a logical endpoint that you wouldn't be able to in contemporary fantasy. And thirdly, diversity in fantasy and diversity in stories in general is important because it lets you see beyond the veil, because every minority has a veil, you know, the mask, the front they put up when they're interacting with the majority groups. But every group kind of code switches, you know. African Americans, we switch up our, you know, our timbre, the way we sound, our vocabulary. Some groups, they do everything they can to hide and eliminate their accents. Other groups go by completely different names when they're among the majority group. And then once we're with the other minority groups, you know, our groups, those masks fade away. And we get to be more of ourselves. And fantasy and diversity in fantasy allows us to see how people are beyond the veil when the majority group isn't around. And it leads to more authenticity, more insight, and just a more meaningful experience, if that makes sense.
It does. Because everything that you're saying is something that I very, like, in my core agree with. Because it's one of the things that I talk about. It's one of the reasons why I have created spaces like the podcast and the YouTube channel, because like you said, there is a, I would say basically it's a safe space when you don't have to put on a mask and present yourself in a certain way in order to be perceived. It's literally what I say all the time. Like, I write stories about Black girls who aren't all that nice because, you know, right, as a Black woman, whenever I am authentically myself a lot of times, which is, you know, an introvert. So I'm not like super friendly. I'm not super like, hey, how are you, to like people in real life. But in certain spaces, like, you know, when I was still working as a teacher, or when I was working literally anywhere else, or like in predominantly white spaces, it's like, if I wasn't like that, I was seen as standoffish, and I was seen as rude, and I was seen as a problem. And exactly, it's just kind of like you said, you have to have this mask on to present yourself in a certain way. And when you don't, you're perceived as not very nice. And so that's why I kind of say that I write stories about Black girls who aren't all that nice. And what you're saying is the same reason why I also wanted to write fantasy, because it's just kind of like you said, you can explore things within fantasy that you can't do in contemporary, because contemporary still has all of the societal roles that we have to function under. Whereas fantasy, you are given a look into a world where it's just like, this is how I think, this is how we think, this is how I view, you know, my culture and my family and my people and my friends, and how I would interact with these concepts. Because something else that I see a lot on the internet is how people say that, you know, certain trends are done, right? But then There's also this conversation where it's like, okay, but, you know, people of color have not had time to play with these trends. We haven't had time yet to completely saturate the market of, you know, Black vampires or indigenous werewolves or, you know, Asian pixies or whatever. Like, there's still so much in this fantasy genre that hasn't been, I'll say, dipped in color, right? Where it's just like, there's still so much space and so much room for it. And when you talked about the mask, right, and kind of seeing beyond it and seeing what's on the other side, it's also one of the reasons why I feel like one of the stances that I have pretty strongly is the idea that non-BIPOC authors really shouldn't be writing BIPOC stories, not characters, but BIPOC stories, as if they are told from an authentic standpoint. Because, like you said, there is always going to be conversations that are had when you're in a what you perceive as a safe space versus when you are interacting among the majority of your space, of your area, you know? And
right.
I'm one of those people where I'm like, okay, if you don't know what those conversations are, it doesn't matter. Because if you're outside of the identity that you're trying to write, there are always going to be conversations that are had that you can't research, that you can't find out about, you know? There's always going to be a certain level of uncertainty with that. And
right.
I don't know. I know that there are different takes on the internet about whether or not, you know, the nuance of, oh, can I write a story that's an identity outside of my own? And I'm kind of curious what your take is on it.
Well, the art of writing and the art of art at its core is empathy. So I feel like when you venture out and try to write about characters and culture that are outside your own sphere, it's important to keep that empathy in mind, but also keep in mind, where do you see this culture? Like, what is your starting point? Because I feel like where a lot of non-BIPOC writers get in trouble is that their starting point with this culture is very flawed. If you're a male author and you only interact with women in terms of trying to pick them up and start a relationship with them, when you try to write these characters based on that sole perception, that's how they're going to turn out. If you want to write about Hispanic and Latino characters and your only sphere of influence, or the only time you see them is within the sphere of immigration and all the troubles that puts on them, your writing is going to be pretty disingenuous, because there's far more to that identity than just that. So it's really important just to research like hell, like everything you can think of. Talk to people. I cannot emphasize that enough. Talk to people, and not just like pretend to talk and pretend to listen, just like actually understand where these people are coming from, and just understand like what their story is, what this culture means to them, why it's so important, and basically what it means to them. And third, just understand, no matter how much you research, you're just always going to be an outsider. You're always going to miss something. And that's okay, because I would say I'm part of the Black American culture, and there are plenty of things that I miss all the time. In this book, I'm writing about West African cultures. I'm not technically in that culture, but I still researched everything as much as I could just to understand where all these, even if they're fictional, where all these cultures that I'm pulling from come from, like what they went through, what they want to be, how they're perceived as, what they are beyond that. So I think it's basically all that to say is, I think it's just important is to just be as empathetic as possible, because people can, you know, the reader can see a disingenuous story a mile away. They can see you did not put any effort into understanding this culture, even if you're not a part of it. So as long as that genuine effort was put into the work, then I think they should be okay. You still have to write really well, though. But as long as the passion and empathy is there, everything else will follow.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you're convincing me to consider broadening my mindset on it, because I think my stance has always been, you know, representation is meant for people with a lived identity, you know?
Right.
And so I always am hesitant whenever someone's like, oh, this isn't my identity, but I'm writing it as if it is. And I think
right.
I always kind of, not a bombastic side eye, but kind of like, okay, but like, what is the intention behind this, you know? Because
yeah, it's something that's very easy to get wrong. So yeah, your hesitance does make a lot of sense, because there have been a lot of cases where it's just gotten absolutely wrong. But
yeah, and I think sometimes it just feels, I don't want to say malicious, but sometimes it feels very self-serving. And I think that's what you were touching on earlier when you were talking about having empathy. Because I know, like, as an African-American, a lot of times the situation is, you know, there's in America, you know, there's a white author who is writing a story about an African-American person from their perspective for the entirety of the book and then presenting it as, oh, this is a Black story. And it's just kind of like, there are so many things that don't line up and the empathy isn't there. And right. then the conversation becomes like, oh, well, you guys said that you wanted diversity, but it's, I feel like there's so much nuance to the conversation when it comes to diversity in fiction and fantasy, because I also feel like as both a reader and an author, when I hear the phrase, oh, we want diversity in books, for me at least, I'm like, that diversity also includes diverse authors writing their right. stories, not the same authors who have been, you know, the traditional majority within this industry, all of a sudden writing characters that don't reflect their lived experience, whether it's who they are or even who they interact with, but just like we talked about earlier, just following a trend and trying to satisfy a market that they don't really engage with, you know?
Yeah, I would say true diversity in fiction and the publishing industry has to come from within the author community or just within the person, not from the companies or the big publishers, because diversity to them is just another way to make profit. There's not a lot of intent or heart behind it. So I feel like in order to achieve like meaningful diversity, it needs to start with the authors and the actual creatives who have actually something meaningful to say and not just so that they can look good on the quarterly reports.
Agreed. So that being said, I'm going to leave that where it is, because like I said, this is a very nuanced conversation. I feel like it could take up the entirety of the podcast if we let it.
I'm game if you are.
Well, I still also want to talk about your actual like writing process, because one of the things on the podcast, I know there are a lot of authors who listen and are always looking for like what other people's journey is like, especially when it comes to the publishing side of it. So I kind of want to know, like, for you, what was kind of like your biggest challenge when it came to like finishing your book and publishing it, getting it out in the world? And then also not just your biggest challenge, but also your biggest wins that you feel like.
I guess the biggest challenge would just be a lot of challenges, actually. Just mainly motivation, because like you said, writing is a very isolating experience, a very isolating process. And for the longest time, you just feel like you're not getting anywhere. There were days where I wrote like 10 pages after a writing session, but I still didn't feel like I did anything, because I was like, I'm just going to delete this anyway, and I'm going to be back to where I started. So I didn't really do anything. So the biggest challenge was just finding ways to just keep myself going, keep myself motivated, and keep the end goal in mind. And then one way I did that was just asking myself, okay, so you stop writing. What else are you going to do that enriches your soul the way writing can? And I could never find it. I can never get an answer to that question. So I just kept writing. And then slowly but surely, I just basically put one word in front of the other, put one foot in front of the other, laid another brick, so on and so forth. And eventually I finished. And the biggest triumph for me will always just be writing those two magical words, the end, or in this case, end of book one. But you get what I mean. Yeah. But I guess my biggest triumph, I would say, is I guess writing characters that people really seem to connect with, because since the book has been out, I've managed to talk to some people and they all say, I loved Rizzio. She was my favorite character. And that particular character was really challenging for me, because unlike her brothers, Rizzio doesn't have any martial ability. She doesn't have any magic. She's a very slender 13-year-old girl with a big brain. She knows her law. She knows how to talk to people, but that's about it. So every time I put her in situations, it was a challenge for me to figure out how to get her out of them without her resorting to, like, you know, sword fighting, because that wouldn't make any sense for her character. So the fact that people really connected with her and really enjoyed her aspect of the story, I thought was a big triumph for me.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Because as someone who is currently trying to write like less fight scenes where it's like, oh, this is more of an intellectual battle. Right. It is so hard to write characters who are smarter than you because you have to at least be as smart as them. And it's just like, oh, okay. Should have thought about this a little bit more. But
yeah, the biggest challenge, like, it's not much of a spoiler, but in one chapter, she was facing down with a guy with a pretty big machete, and then her bodyguard's not there. She's by herself, and she has no means of defending herself. And I was like, how do you get out of this? How do you? So I was stuck on that part for about 3 months before I figured it out.
And I think that's also like a very legitimate part of the process too, that I feel like, again, more people should know going into writing, or if they are in the midst of their journey, it's like understanding that sometimes you hit roadblocks and it just takes a while to work through it, where you just have to sit with it. And sometimes it's longer than a couple of days or a couple of hours. You know, sometimes you have to sit with it for weeks, months, while your brain is like, how do we get past this? Because the way I think about it, at least, is like, sometimes you have to wait for that spark of inspiration to hit you to be like, oh, this is what needs to happen. And then you're like, why didn't I think of this earlier? But also, it's like, sometimes you have to keep going, keep living, keep experiencing things in order to hit that inspiration that's going to be like, okay, this is how we get over the hurdle, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like mining in a way, where you're like just whacking away at the wall, and then sometimes you think you struck gold, but then it's just, you know, just a rock, or you run into like a dirt clog, you think it's something, and then just crumbles. And then it's only when you just keep hammering away, take a break and keep hammering away, do you find like the gold nuggets and the diamonds and everything like that. So it is a process.
It is a process. It is a journey. That's what I say on this podcast all the time. It is a journey, not a destination. Because the thing is, once you finish one book, you just get to go back to the beginning and do it all over again. And it's so fun. So fun.
Yeah. I am outlining book two right now. And I'm basically right back to where I started, where I'm like, okay, I'm on chapter 6. What happens? I have no idea. Although in this case it's a bit easier. I don't want to create false hope. It's still really hard, but at least this time I have a bigger sphere of reference because I have the world more or less mapped out, so I can refer to something within the world where I'm not sure what to do. Whereas with book one, I had nothing. I had to create the world and write the story at the same time. Mm-hmm. For this one, I can just write the story.
And I think that's also the difference, because, and I also like feel like once you are working on book two, it's a lot easier in the sense of you've already written one book. So it's no longer in your mind of like, can I do this? It's like, no, I can absolutely do this. I just have to figure out how I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
So huge, huge distinction. That being said, I have a couple more questions, and then I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for this episode. And I think you've pretty much covered this, but this is the official question of, you know, what's up next for you? Because I know we've talked about the series, but you also mentioned that you work on short stories as well. So,
yes, right now, like I said, I am outlining book two. I have no idea when it's going to come out just yet. So basically, I am the drawing board with that, but as soon as I have a more concrete answer, I will let everybody know. I do have several short stories out. They're not particularly related to the novel, but they're kind of like proto versions of different stories in the world. So I plan on exploring different historical events within the world or different mythological stories with those short stories, and hopefully to add more nuance and depths to events that the characters talk about. I want to break into historical fiction, but that will require even more research, because this time I don't have the safety net of, oh yeah, it's just fictional to fall back on, because with history, you actually have to know your stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe get into screenwriting at some point.
Ooh, that sounds fun. I feel like at some point every author like dabbles with, maybe screenwriting would be fun, because there's always that idea of, if my books get turned into movies or get picked up for any type of visual medium, I want to have the skill so that I'm ready to be in this writer's room telling them what to do.
Exactly. That is exactly my thinking. I want to say, okay, I already wrote this screenplay. Here it is. I mean, knowing the way Hollywood and screenwriters work right now, it's probably not going to get me very far, but at the very least, I can say, hey, I wrote this thing. This is how I want it done. And if they don't go with that, at least I can honestly say to myself that I did my absolute best.
Exactly. Exactly. I understand 100%. The only reason that I myself just couldn't get with screenwriting is because I was like, ooh, the formatting of this is wild. And I was like, I cannot teach myself how to do the screenwriting while I'm also trying to actively write the book. I was like, I have to pick a struggle. I was like, let me finish the series before I try to figure out how to write a screenplay for it. But I wish you the most success.
Yeah, I actually took several classes in college on how to write a screenplay so that at the very least I had the basics down after I finished the novel so I could at least try. But yes, it's a completely different medium with completely different points and goals, because you have to write everything as if it's on the screen. So there's no internal monologue, there's no narration. Everything just has to be something an actor can visually do on screen or a camera can pick up on. And it's not easy making the shift.
I can imagine, because literally I wrote like two lines of a screenplay and I was like, wait a second. I can't include the internal monologue that's right here. I can't say like, this is what she was thinking. I was like, you know what? Let's just leave this for a future version of myself to deal with.
Good plan.
Okay. That being said, this is the last question, and it's the question that I ask everyone who comes on the podcast. And that is, what writing advice would you give to any new authors starting out on their writing journey?
Believe in yourself and believe in your product and believe in what you're creating. Because like I said before, readers and the audience can pick up on passion. They can pick up on sincerity. They can pick up on effort that's put into creating a good story. And in order to do that, you just have to really believe in what you're making, because if you don't believe in it, how can you expect a reader, an agent, or a big publishing house to believe in it? So writing is a very solitary activity, like we said, so you have to be the one to keep your light, keep your candle lit. You're the one who has to keep the fire going for as long as you can. And then when you get to the point where you can't refill it on your own, that's when you seek out your community and they will light the fire and they will keep it lit for you. But you yourself has to basically cast that first log, and you have to make sure to keep that passion and that sincerity going, and that belief in what it is you're making will be worth something at the end.
Absolutely. I say this all the time, especially like when I'm editing, and I will say it again here. If you as the author don't want to read your book, then you need to reevaluate your story, because
that's exactly it.
You have to, like Amari said, you have to be the biggest advocate for your story. And if you don't want to sit down and read the book that you've written, then it's going to be a hard sell to convince anyone else that they should sit down and read it too. So you are your own first judge. And for a lot of us, we are also our harshest critics. So Listen to yourself, but also give yourself a little bit of grace, because sometimes even in that harshness, it's like, okay, but you still have a good product, So once you know that, once you believe that, that is like a major step in this entire process, this entire journey. So I agree with everything that Amari just said. So please take it to heart. That being said, that is pretty much it. So Amari, if you could let the people know where to find you, I will go ahead and wrap us up.
So you can find me on Instagram at Omari_A. Richards. And you can also find me on TikTok at @O_Richards_author. I don't have Twitter or X at the moment. I don't think I'll ever get it. But yeah, those are the two places where you can find me.
Awesome. That being said, you guys, you know, I will have a link to his website down in the description box if you're on YouTube, show notes if you're listening to this on the podcast. And yeah, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast, you guys. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/CM Lockhart or grab a copy of my books, We Are the Origin and We Are Dying Gods, from my website, cmlockhart.com. If you'd like to support Omari, then please purchase his book and follow him on social media. There are links in the show notes for everything, and thank you guys again so much for listening. Until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin.